Hello and welcome to the DeFi Daily, a 10-minute or less DeFi and crypto update. I'm Amy here with Pat, and today is Wednesday, August 26th, 2020. I can't believe it's almost the end of August. You can check us out on Twitter at The DeFi Daily or online at thedefidaily.com. As always, thank you to our sponsor, Bitwave. Bitwave is a DeFi investment and digital asset management platform that does allocation monitoring, token tax tracking, gain loss reporting, and more. You can check them out online at bitwave.io or on Twitter at Bitwave Platform. All right, up first, DeFi has surpassed $7 billion in locked funds, but just six projects hold 90% of the capital. And even though the total value locked is high, Pat, what is the actual usage like?
Well, this is where it gets really interesting. So we've been looking, there's a couple of good metrics you can look at around usage for these DeFi projects. The one that DappRadar uses is unique active wallets. What that essentially means is you can think of it as unique active users within a 24-hour period, but it is the number of wallet addresses that have interacted with the smart contract within a 24-hour period. So it's probably not exactly, doesn't probably exactly line up with users. Let's call it off by 10, 15%. It doesn't really matter. All you're looking at for these kind of numbers is magnitudinal anyways. So here's what's really interesting. There's a concept in computer science called Metcalfe's Law, which basically says it talks about the size of a network related to the number of people that are involved in the network. Obviously, the size of a network for blockchain and types in crypto is very important. And so there's a ratio that you can track, which is Metcalfe's ratio, which is how many people are in a network, how many people are using a token, and how big that token is and how connected it is, that basically says how successful it is actually being. So when you see a lot of TVL or a really high token price, but you don't necessarily see a ton of users behind it, that is a indicator that there might be a speculative bubble. And so that's kind of what when I look at what's going on right now in usage across these applications, that's what I see. Right now for Aave, you're seeing 853 unique active wallets in the last 24 hours. For Maker, you're seeing 421. Curve and Balancer a little bit more. Curve's at 1,100 and Balancer's at 2,100. And then of course coming out way on top which is more in line with what I would expect, is Uniswap with 1,500 active users within the last 24 hours. Now that might be a little bit skewed because they have people that have, you know, market makers might post funds from earlier periods and that might be getting counted in their accounts. But it does make sense. Like exchanges are naturally going to have higher number of people using it. But it's weird that Uniswap is actually one of the lower value tokens and lower value TVLs compared to some of these other projects that have significantly order of magnitude less users. In Aave's case, two orders of magnitude less users. So this is stuff that we need to be watching for. There's obviously, I think, a little bit of a speculative bubble around a few of these tokens. A lot of it, you know, once you start to see active users going up, that's when you want to really jump in on these.
Great. All right. Next, a group called DeFi Natives announced Fair Launch Capital, a project to help with auditing the DeFi protocols before they hit the market. Pat, talk to us a bit about that.
Yeah, well, this is really interesting. So they came out, they said, don't call them a VC. It was a group, a couple of gentlemen from IDO and another guy who's just been a blockchain advisor for a while. The goal was to essentially bring, you know, there's sort of two paths you can go down right now in order to have money as a cryptocurrency or as a blockchain company. So you can either raise VC, and what that's going to do is the VC is going to demand that you hold on to a lot of your tokens and essentially centralize the value being generated from that. That's a little bit incongruous with the decentralized finance mentality of you know, spreading wide the actual governance of these protocols. The other option is you launch with as much speculation as possible. And I think you can kind of look at Yam for this. Yam really nailed it in this, which is that they came out with a good idea, good marketing. You know, it's memey, but whatever it takes to get people's attention, it doesn't really matter. They came out, they got attention, they got a lot of investment, but that was the first money. The way that they had structured their actual actual governance model meant that they didn't get any money. Like the people who started Yam did not, as far as I know, and I could be wrong about this, but the people who started Yam did not make very much money off of it because they essentially had their governance model begin issuing governance tokens as of day one, and people immediately put all this money in. So all the governance tokens went to everyone in the ecosystem, not the founders. So that's great for the ecosystem, but that meant that they don't have any money as a company to do things that are really important, like audit their smart contracts. That turned out to bite Yam really badly, which they had an enormous smart contract problem. When you're coming out and the only instantiation of your product in the world is this code floating out there as a smart contract, and there's an enormous bug in it, you're in really bad shape if the very first brush people have with you is a huge issue. So Yam is now trading at 2 cents, down from significantly higher than that. And a lot of that has to do with this fact that they didn't audit their contract. And so Fair Launch Capital is coming to kind of bridge the gap there, which is figure out a way to get you enough capital that you can sort of do an initial view. You can do an initial audit of your contract or some security work, whatever it is that you need to kind of get off the ground, but not be a VC, not centralize token ownership, not centralize the protocols that you're building, but provide a little bit of security. So it's a really cool model. I'm excited to see what happens with it.
Yeah, me too. I like the model as well. All right, next, popular staking platform Tezos has taken a step closer to becoming a DeFi product with integration of their new Harbinger Price Oracle. Pat, talk to us more about this.
Well, obviously, oracles have become one of the most important parts of any DeFi ecosystem. And so what's going to happen is that more of these chains that are not Ethereum are going to have to find solutions for good oracles. So obviously Chainlink is providing, Chainlink and a few others, Oracle has a solution, a few other solutions exist out there for providing oracle solutions on the Ethereum blockchain. Now, every blockchain is going to have this, or they just fall behind. I mean, obviously, all of these secondary blockchains that are heavily focused on smart contracts are already feeling the heat. I mean, you can't look at the way what's happened with Ethereum usage and the way the DeFi explosions happen. You can't be a second tier smart contract blockchain, look at that and feel comfortable about the way things are going for you. That makes you incredibly nervous. You're looking at EOS, you're looking at Tezos, the different tokens that are out there. So all these guys are gonna have to figure out ways to bring, they're all kind of playing catch up in some ways. They're gonna have to figure out ways to bring technology that is getting developed first on Ethereum and backport it to their or somehow otherwise bring it back to their platform. So this is going to keep on happening. You're going to see a lot of examples of this. You'll start to see this for other tokens besides Tezos. You'll obviously see it across all the smart contracts. That's why I like to think of blockchains in terms of really currency focused blockchains like Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, those Zcash privacy and plus currency versus the smart contract blockchains like Ethereum, EOS, Tezos. These are the guys that are really going to have to fight hard to stay up with Ethereum. A lot of the secondary smart contract blockchains have better settlement time, so they have faster blocks or a better model for how they're doing their blocks, their block minting. But at the end of the day, none of that matters if people aren't using it. So when you have, I think Uniswap is one of the number one used dApps out there at 15,000 people. That chain, you need to have that many people to power an exchange. You need to have that much liquidity. So, I think it's fair to say that right now, Ethereum is in a very, very, very strong position to essentially own the smart contract side of the cryptocurrency world.
All right. Well, with that, we'll end it here. Thank you, as always, for listening to the DeFi Daily.
Have a good one. Bye.